So I'm here talking to Lisa Rondiecki, Australia's greatest female marathon runner. Lisa, your earliest running memory, what would that be, please?
High school. After school, my mum was a PE teacher, and instead of going home, they had hurdles set up. And I used to train on the high school oval, you know, the grass oval, and run over the hurdles and do the long jump. Actually, when I was in primary school, I would walk to the high school to get a ride home with mum, so I would train with the high school kids. And that's the earliest. I just loved it.
You were a 400-meter hurdler before you were a marathon runner, is that right?
Some would say not. I was trying to be. 100-meter hurdler, then 400-meter hurdler. That's actually how I went to the United States on scholarship, University of Oregon. My first scholarship was for 400-meter hurdles, believe it or not. And I ran one season. They figured out that I wasn't going to cut it, and they suggested that I try cross-country in their autumn, which I did, and I was better at cross-country. So I did one season of 400-meter hurdles for University of Oregon, switched to cross-country, and then moved straight to 3,000-meter track the next track season.
So you stayed in the States for a while, or you came home after your 12-month scholarship or two-year scholarship?
I went on scholarship, then I came back and actually worked at a Commonwealth Bank in Rundle Mall, Adelaide, for a while to save money to go back to the States. Just because I just love living there and the competition. And I had a boyfriend who was American, so that was a big part of it. That was my first husband. So, you know, I went back for a combination of reasons.
Yeah. So you moved back to America at the middle of your career to Arizona. So that was mainly for the altitude, was it?
When I was first in Arizona, I went for the weather, because University of Oregon, Eugene, Oregon, it rains like 9 months of the year. If you ever seen movies of Seattle or someplace like that, Eugene is like that. It rains 9-10 months of the year, and I hated it. So after the 84 Olympics, I moved to Phoenix, Arizona, because it was like the driest, hottest place in America. And I pretty much stayed there. Phoenix is 1,000 feet altitude, which is not considered altitude. It's pretty much sea level. But if you drive 2.5 hours north, you're in Flagstaff, which is 7,500 feet, which is higher than Boulder, where I know some of our track athletes train. It's higher than Albuquerque. Boulder and Albuquerque are each around 5,000-6,000 feet. So Arizona is pretty amazing, because you can be pretty much at sea level, but drive just 2.5 hours, and then you're at really high altitude with a track and good facilities. So you had the best of both worlds there.
So you would drive 2.5 hours to go to training?
Well, when I met Yobus, who was my African husband from Kenya, who was a world record holder at 10,000 metres, he insisted on training at altitude. I didn't really buy the whole altitude thing, because I'd had a lot of success at sea level. But he'd trained all his life at altitude, so for each of us, it was like a bit of a psychological battle. He thought he couldn't run well if he wasn't at altitude, and I didn't like the feeling of how hard running was up there. So anyway, eventually we bought a house in Flagstaff, Arizona at 7,000 feet and moved to Flagstaff at 7,000 feet. But whenever I just got sick of sort of the struggle of running slower times at altitude, I would go down to Phoenix and like stay in a hotel room for a few days and train at sea level just so I could run fast again. And especially, I mean, whenever you're at altitude, you pretty much get nasty winters, you know, snow and wind and all that sort of thing. And some athletes just don't mind training in those conditions. And I was used to, like, palm trees and being warm. So when it was winter in Flagstaff, he really didn't mind it. But I just, you know, to train in freezing conditions and be wearing so much clothes and gloves and everything, I hated it. I wanted to be in shorts and a singlet. So sometimes I would go down to Phoenix because it might be 20, 30 degrees Fahrenheit warmer in Phoenix, and I could just run in shorts. Yeah.
I think I remember you telling me that when during winter in Flagstaff, you would go to indoor stadium and run laps and laps around the track. Is that right?
Actually, Flagstaff had an indoor track that it was one of the biggest indoor tracks, because the actual track area was about 300 metres around. But the curves are still tight. So if you're trying to do something like 10 times a mile, so you're running 5 and a bit laps to a mile, and you're doing 10 times a mile with recovery in between, that was really when I started getting injured. And I think when you're doing, like, repeatedly going around these tight turns, it really wears, it's like fraying your Achilles tendon. I know that sometimes when sprinters get Achilles problems, they can run the straight, but it's the curve that really hurts them. And I think doing a lot on that indoor track, which sometimes was your only option, was one of the starts of injuries for me.
You're an incredibly hard trainer. I remember based in Canberra for a reasonable amount of time. I was there, and I would see you go up to the track there and do some mile repetitions and 400-meter efforts on the track there in Canberra. Did you enjoy going and training hard?
Why are you laughing? Well, it looked like I wasn't having fun. I think because my background as a hurdler, I did a lot of really intense stuff. Like, I always put spikes on. A lot of people, like Dick Telford, Rob DiCostella, and maybe you yourself even tried to tell me to, like, take it off the track, go to a trail somewhere and just do it in flats and have a bit more fun and be more relaxed about it. But I think because of my track background, like, I was timing everything to the tenth of a second. If I was doing 20 times 400, I'm timing each one to the tenth of a second. And, you know, that gets pretty intense after a while, and I think it can even, you know, it works against you. But it was like I had this feeling that if I was going to the track to do a track session, I had to come away knowing exactly what I did. Whereas a lot of the other athletes in Canberra would go to the forest and do fartlek or something, and they'd just run according to effort and come away from it and feel like they did a really good session. And I'd be thinking, well, how do you know if you didn't, you know? So I think that, yeah, it was like a bit obsessive with time and distance. I had to know. But that can really work against you too, because how long can you keep doing that for? Yeah, it's just too intensive.
And your most cherished memory in running, I'd put my money on the silver medal in Seoul, because the Olympic silver medal is absolutely unbelievable achievement, and you're the only Australian athlete ever to get a medal in the marathon at the Olympics. So yourself, what's your most cherished memory?
It has to be that, but pretty close, or I've got to say almost equal to winning New York Marathon. And interesting, Karen McCann said today that that is her favourite race. She's run New York 3 times. It's the atmosphere, it's everything associated with that race. Yeah, Olympic silver, but winning New York actually was huge for me, because it came pretty close on the disappointment of being a favourite in Barcelona. And was it Barcelona I was favourite? Yeah. And I didn't even finish that marathon. So coming off an Olympics where I didn't even finish a race that I expected to win, and then come back to New York and win it, that made New York pretty special to me too. That was in 1992. Plus, I set a course record in New York that stood for 9 years. So, yeah, but Olympic medal, I mean, I probably value it more now than I did at the time. I was really thrilled at the time because I just wanted a medal. But now when I look at great runners who, for whatever reason, everything's got to go right on the day, and so many great runners don't have an Olympic medal to their name, and I have a greater appreciation for that now than I did at that time.
Maybe was it because at the time you very much wanted to get the gold medal, and because you got the silver you almost thought that partly you hadn't fully achieved what you're after?
Yeah, because with 5 kilometres to go, there were 4 of us. Rosa Motor, who eventually won, myself, Katrin Dorr from East Germany, and a Chinese woman that I knew nothing about, didn't expect to be there. And I remember distinctly thinking, there's 4 people and 3 medals. And right after that, Rosa took off. And I had to make a decision whether to go with her and try and get a gold, or, you know, there were still 2 other runners and I might get nothing. And I think I kind of played it a little bit safe, staying back with the other 2 to make sure that I had something left and make sure I got a medal. So afterwards, you always second guess that. But, and she won by 13 seconds, which in a marathon isn't massive, you know. And then I'd say to myself, well, you didn't die when you crossed the line, so obviously there was something left. And so I don't know if you ever do that, but you go, well, I didn't die, I wasn't taken to hospital, therefore I could have run faster. Have you ever done that?
No. Possibly.
Well, I think of Alberto Salazar. He used to run races and he was packed on ice, remember? Once in Falmouth, Massachusetts, they packed him on ice and gave him last right. So I'm thinking, okay, you lost by 13 seconds, you didn't die, you weren't packed on ice, so maybe you could have won. But my agent, who Jos Hermans from the Netherlands, who was also a great runner, he said if you'd run 13 seconds faster, she would have run 13 seconds faster again. She was better on the day. So, that's how you have to think about it. Sure, yeah, I didn't die, I could have run faster, but she was better, she would have run faster then too. So, you know, happy with silver.
Did you change anything about the way you you train now that you look back? And I'm not sure if you follow running now, but would you have trained, I don't think you could have trained any harder, but you would possibly run a few less miles or maybe cross-trained a little bit more, maybe had a few rest days here and there. Would you change anything if you had your time again?
I mean, whatever I did, I enjoyed at the time and it worked pretty well for me. And it's hard to... And the trouble is that when you're doing something that works, I was reluctant to try anything new. And again, Karen actually mentioned that today. She said she's actually more willing to try something new. But I would try something, and if it worked, I just didn't want to change it. Like same workouts year after year after year because they were working until I got too old and they didn't work anymore. So yeah, I probably could have taken a bit more risk and tried some different things, lower mileage, higher quality. You know, taking a rest day now and then. I mean, just in terms of mentally, that might have been a really good thing to do. Yeah.
I guess there's a saying, dare to be different, and sometimes it's a matter whether you're prepared to take that risk. But with regards to the pressure before races, did you ever feel you became nervous in the lead up to races, and you ever think that if you did that ever possibly affect your performances at all?
It was when I got older and I didn't get nervous. I just couldn't run as well. I mean, the times, like when I was younger and I felt sick and I had, you know, all that adrenaline and butterflies, that was when I ran my best. And then after years and years and years of it, it almost became like a job. And then if the streets weren't lined with people like New York, it was like showing up for a job and a paycheck at the end. And that was when I couldn't run well anymore. And did you ever find that or not?
I never liked being owned or felt like when I was at the Australian Institute of Sport, I didn't like enjoy my running as much because I felt like I was owned, I guess, and it was a bit more like a job then. But the reason why I gave it away was I was just starting to slow up.
That's why I eventually gave it away. But there was also, I mean, I think there just came a time when I'd had enough. I got older, I got injuries. Training wasn't that much fun anymore because I'd train in the morning. Whole day is spent icing, stretching things so that I could go out and train again because I had all these injury problems, and that just wasn't a life I wanted to lead. So, you know, and then you start not running as well and people aren't paying you as much to run, and I'm thinking, okay, so why am I doing this? It hurts, it's not fun, and I'm not making a lot of money anymore. So I just didn't want to do it, you know. And when the financial reason for doing it fell away too, it was like, okay, if I don't want to do it and I'm not getting paid much, it was almost a relief. It was great. I can stop. And, I mean, I had a great career, and I was happy to stop because I'd had enough.
Do you have a fantastic career? Do you actually remember all your races, or is it all very much a blur? I mean, you must have had hundreds of races in your time. Do some of them just sort of, they sort of fallen out of your memory?
Yeah, people will ask, like, what year, you know, say something about when did you win Beta Breakers, which is a pretty big race, and I honestly can't remember the year. I sort of remember winning it. Well, I know I won it because I got a BMW. And it was red and it was a convertible. But I can't remember years or times. You know, I remember the big ones, but there were a lot of races and some of them blur together.
Last year after the Cedar Surfer, when we were down to at the finish there and we were walking through all the people finishing, and I asked you in a roundabout sort of way if you miss the running or the competition or whatever, and you mentioned that it's almost like when you were an elite athlete, it's almost like it was a different person, it's almost like it wasn't you, and I guess, and I almost, I very much agreed with that, was how I felt also. So would you like just a bit of insight into that as to how you were running, you were so incredibly focused with your running, but now that you're removed from it and fully retired, you feel it's almost as if it wasn't you?
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't think I had a very wide vision in a sense when I was running. I mean, I really focused on training, and that was what the center of every day was. And even if I got invited to something but it didn't fit my training schedule, I said no to a lot of things, even like family things, and because training came first. And, you know, my goal was to try and be the best in the world. And when I, say, watch City to Surf now and I watch Monas or someone and I think of, I know what it takes, but I think, you know, how did I ever do that? Because it's just so much effort and it hurts so much and it's such a daily commitment that, and because I don't do it anymore and I haven't done it in a while, I'm thinking, you know, who would get up morning after morning after morning and do that and train no matter what the weather is and that sort of thing. So in a sense, from an outside now, I can't quite grasp how I got myself to do what these athletes are still doing, because I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I just wouldn't do it for anything. If it's raining, I sleep in. And from that sense, it's kind of weird from the outside to, or even if I think of the pressure, like if I'm watching some Olympic event on TV or Commonwealth Games and I see the athletes lined up, and I'll say to someone, ooh, can you imagine, like, your living depends on the outcome of this race, and it's like 42.2 kilometres long, and your bonuses and your income's going to depend on how you do, and you've got to run through all of this pain. And I'm thinking, gross. I mean, can you imagine doing that?
Yeah, but that was you.
But see, I just look back and I think, how the hell? Because I don't want to do that anymore. It hurts. It's really hard. But on the other hand, when I look back at the time, I loved I love the attention. I love the media attention. I love the highs you got from running well. And I guess I like the training. But I look back now and I just think, I don't know how people do it.
I guess it's a matter of you're in a zone, and I guess you've entered another chapter in your life now.
Stepped out of the zone. I think once you step out of it, you don't get back in.
The fact that life is a journey rather than a destination, and with yourself, you were incredibly focused with your running, and I guess that's one of the main reasons why you were so successful, is that you were, and I don't mean to say this in a derogatory term, but I guess selfish. Would you agree, selfish?
What is it? Selfish, or what is it? Self-centered, I think, is worse than selfish. I think, to really achieve at that level, whether you want to call it self-centered or selfish, you have to make training a priority and therefore, you know, say no to a lot of things, and other people in your life who are important have to work around your needs, your travel needs and your racing schedule and whatever. And one of the nicest things of not being an athlete is you don't have to be the center anymore, and that's nice, you know, because that gets old after a while. But I think to be a top athlete, whatever it is you want to call it, focused, whatever, it does involve some sort of, in a sense, what must look to other people like selfishness, because a lot of things revolve around your training and meals on a regular schedule and getting your sleep and whatever your travel schedule is. And I kind of find it nice to not have things revolve around me anymore.
Now you don't run as much anymore. I was speaking to you earlier, and you run maybe once or twice a week, if that. But is that because you're making up for lost time now, making up for all those times when you didn't, you know, stop for a glass of wine or go to the movies? We've actually got a glass of wine right here now, but and some peanuts, but go to family occasions or travel whenever you want to. Is that why now you're not running as much, because you want to just live a very relaxed and more social life?
Well, you would probably know this too. Once you've got kids, it's a real effort to find time to exercise. You know, I work in special ed. I'm a teacher. I've just remarried. My daughter's 14, turning 15 soon. And I think for a couple of years I didn't run at all, and I realised I wasn't setting her a very good example, because we just weren't exercising at all, neither was she. And then I thought, you know, it's not a great way to have a kid growing up. She wasn't fat or anything, she's very slim, but I thought, she's just not exercising.
So you went for about 2 years, you were the most focused individual I've ever seen training, and you went 2 years with no exercise at all.
I was very focused on not exercising, so I didn't. But hey, I was busy just, I don't know, doing other things. So now we try and make it a priority, like at least 3 times a week, which is not ideal. 5 would be better, to go to the gym or get out, you know, and at least do 40 to 45 minutes of exercise that is fun. But we're living in Phoenix, Arizona, where in the summer, I mean, it's impossible. It's 110 plus degrees Fahrenheit every day. So, you know, unless you wait till late at night or you're up early in the morning, you can't go for a run. So we've joined a gym, but, you know, then you've got to get in the car and drive there, and I'd rather have a glass of wine. But no, I look around me. You walk around in any mall in America and it is disgusting. I mean, you go from walking around Olympic villages to walking anywhere in America and it is just sickening what you see. And I said to my daughter Emma, that is not going to be us. It's not just about not gaining weight, because we tend to stay thin, but I mean, your heart is a muscle, and if you're not exercising, your heart's getting weak. And no, we make an effort at least 3 times a week, and we aim for 5, 6, 7 to just go and do exercise that is fun aerobic exercise for the sake of our health. Because just what I see disgusts me. I mean, it's awful.
So do you go for a jog with the group at the gym or something like that, and here you are dropping off the back an Olympic silver medalist, or dropping off the back a jogging group at the local gym?
I get on a treadmill, and then Emma gets on the one next to me, and she doesn't realise it, but like, I'm sneaking over to see what speed she's got hers on. Because you know how you set the speed for however many miles per hour or kilometres per hour, and I'm like sneaking over to make sure I'm just going a little bit faster than her. But haven't joined a running group. Winter, I might do that. They've got a pretty big marathon in Phoenix now, the Rock and Roll Marathon Series. It's in San Diego and I think Nashville. And, you know, so there's some good running groups around, but people in the summertime in Phoenix, running outdoors is not much of an option.
People recognise you in America? Like if you go to the gym, do people are people aware that you're Lisa Ondieki?
Okay, that was supposed to be funny, right?
No,
absolutely not.
No?
No, good.
When you go for it, so they don't. So when you go for a jog with the local gym in come winter and they ask you, have you got much experience in running, what are you going to say?
I'll say, well, I mean, if someone asked me something about training or knew that I ran, I'd give people advice, but I don't think it's likely to happen.
What about running now? Do you follow running? Like, are you aware of, for example, what the world record is now for the ladies?
For the ladies, there's an honest answer here. In America, if you want to look at track and field results, you've got to search for them. And just coming back here this week in Sydney, I'll be honest, I realised the World Championships were on because they're on TV and I caught up with what Australia's athletes are doing, Craig Mottram and Benita Johnson and these athletes. In America, even with the American athletes, it's kind of sad, but track and field, you've got to search for it. On TV or even in the newspaper, it's just not getting press. Everything's baseball, football, basketball, and track and field has taken a real slide. So, and then in road racing in the States with the big marathons, I think because they haven't had a top American in so long, just the TV and the print coverage is so much less. It's you've got to have the time and make the effort to look for track and field results.
But America had the silver medals in the Olympics last year. In the men's marathon.
In a Phoenix, Arizona paper, wouldn't read about it. It's sort of really local, and you've really got to be actively following the sport and take the time to do it, which is sad, but it just doesn't get a lot of press.
So getting back to the first part of my question before, the world record for women in the marathon now is?
You want me to guess? I'm going to guess around 2:16.
2:15 and a bit of change. Did you ever imagine that a woman would run under 2:20, let alone run 2:15 for a marathon?
I actually thought Ingrid Christensen would, you know, she ran 2:21.06 in London, and it was like over, 15 years ago or something. I actually thought Ingrid might do it. So it took longer than I thought. After Ingrid, there was a gap where there wasn't anyone in a while. Tegla Larupe of Kenya, then I thought she would do it, and I don't think Tegla got under 2:20. So, yeah, I expected them to do it. I mean, I think a lot of that's psychological barriers too, and then when one person breaks it, other people go with them.
Yeah, but maybe 2:19.50 or 2:19.40, but 2:15. I mean, that's amazing. I never thought it would happen to myself. Paula Radcliffe.
Paula, yeah. And how many women have gone under 2:20?
I'm not big up on the stats, but I know there's a Japanese girl who runs under 2:20, and there's a few now. But Paula Radcliffe. So you don't keep up with. So obviously you can't, not with the local paper. You don't have access to what's going on. So you've sort of fallen right out of it. So for example, New York Marathon last year. Do you know who won that?
Okay, New York, and I've said to my husband, Kent, I think it was about 2 weeks into November, and I said, oh, New York must have been run. There was nothing on our news. There was nothing in the newspapers. So, yeah, you would have to just log onto the web, which doesn't take much effort, and look up the result. But as far as there was a time, say in the 80s, when New York on the front of the newspaper, the news part, there'd always be a small caption with picture of the winner and New York Marathon results inside, and that just doesn't happen anymore. So if you get busy and you're not keeping up with the dates and what these events, when these events are on, like London, you wouldn't find the results in an Arizona paper. Just not there. You know, so if you get busy, the time sits by and you think, oh, wait a minute, it's the end of April, London must have been run, and you go look up the results. Or I rely on people at home, like my parents will email me and say, hey, here are the results from London, because they've been in the States and they know we don't get them. It's really, just really different. And there was a world record in the men's 100 metres this year, right?
I believe so. Don't ask me what it is.
My husband, who, like, sometimes he just gets on the web and looks up random things, and he came home one day and said, oh, there was a world record in the men's 100 metres. And, you know, it was some tiny, like, literally three lines of print. You know, it was a blue ribbon event. It wasn't like it was, I would understand if they didn't print discus or shot put results or something, not to denigrate discus and shot put, but this is the men's 100 metres, blue ribbon event. And, you know, two or three lines. So, I don't know. There's just a lot of other sports that's competing within the States and for whatever reason not getting the press and not getting the sponsorship, which is a real shame. But
back to New York and coming to a close here, but when you won New York, were you on every television show that opens and shuts in the States, like the go on David Letterman or any of those type of shows?
You know, I didn't go on David Letterman. I was supposed to go on, it was Good Morning Australia, but we flew to, what did we do? Oh, I was out drinking champagne, that's right, with some people, and didn't get to the studio in time because Australia was 16 hours ahead, and by the time I got back to the hotel, it was a done deal. I didn't go on with David Letterman, but the year after the winners did, and then I think the year after that, they went to the White House and met Bill Clinton and whatever. So it's like I missed all those things. Right after I won it, they're going on David Letterman and to the White House, but and I was drinking champagne when I should have been on Good Morning Australia. So good decision, right? Yeah.
You've got every right to drink champagne, Lisa, and I'm sure you must sleep very well at night knowing what you have achieved in your time. And thanks for your time today.
Hey, you're welcome.